This week, the Rascals mince about the Clinton Foundation, Trump's softening position on immigration, and questioning Mark Kirk's health.
Today is Friday. It is August 26th, 2016. Hi, it is John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals weekly podcast, part of which you can hear on my Saturday show on WGN Radio. That would be Saturdays at 1:30.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio, among other things.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the beloved newspaper columnist at the Chicago Tribune.
He always wants to go last.
I know, we got to come up with some new adjectives for him, though.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Oh, we have new adjectives for him. Don't share them when he's here. Well, the whole fam-damily is back. Kristen, welcome back to our little little gig here.
Oh, it's just so great to be back. Thank you. We did a
live version last Saturday night, but Kristen called in and you called in, John, because you weren't around, and Bertrand was busy doing something with his family, I guess. His priorities are way out of whack.
Whatever.
And so we had an interesting conversation. Stannis came in, and Susan Schmidt from Rose Show came in.
Yeah, it was a good show. I was happy to at least chime in a little bit where I was. I was out of town, too. A few weeks ago on this very podcast, as we wondered about the unpopularity of Hillary Clinton, Kristen McQuarrie said that the media should look more closely at the Clinton Foundation and possible conflicts of interest with Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State. So guess what everyone's talking about now? The Clinton Foundation is a great charity with a terrible name. The president of Charity Watch said that if the Clintons were not involved, that organization would be regarded as one of the greats of our generation. But if they weren't involved, there wouldn't be a Clinton Foundation either. So I'll start with this. Should they, as Donald Trump has said, shut that thing down? Kristen, what's your thought about all of this?
I mean, if she is elected president, yes, I do not think the first husband should be running a charity that is raising millions of dollars from foreign governments. I mean, the idea that they should have been praised because, well, you know what, we're going to dial it down. We're not going to accept, you know, these certain donations if she's elected, but we're going to let our Canadian arm continue to raise money. That's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, do you really think that Saudi Arabia donated millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation because they are so, you know, supportive of the Clinton Foundation's efforts to make HIV drugs cheaper for HIV illness victims? Why do you think these governments are writing huge checks? And by the way, how much do you think $25 million in U.S. money is to many of these other governments? Well, they want access, they're getting it.
While I agree with what Kristen has said so far, I would add the same question could be asked about why does anybody donate to these political campaigns in such huge amounts of money? Do you think
charities or political campaigns?
You said political campaigns. I mean, why do people donate to political campaigns? The problem, the situation of money buying access in politics is nothing new. This particular combination, I agree, the Clintons should have, as soon as she was appointed Secretary of State or nominated for Secretary of State, they should have said shut it down. They should have merged it with the Gates Foundation or some other foundation, gotten out of it. They do good work, but it's everything's been tainted by this association. Kristen's absolutely right. There's no way to avoid these conflicts of interest and you know who's giving money and why.
Well, the appearance of a conflict.
You're right. The appearance of conflict. It was as tone deaf and obtuse a decision as was Hillary Clinton's decision.
Bill Clinton walking across the tarmac to get on the Attorney General's plane.
I mean, let's tell those kids who finally have clean water that they shouldn't have it it doesn't look good.
That
for
is
the,
a far, far exaggeration from what we're saying.
I know, but I love those.
No, but I mean, well, that is what happens. If you shut the Clinton Foundation down, and I don't think we're saying that,
well,
right?
I'm just so happy to hear you say, you know, that it does great work, because no one's saying that. And
oh my gosh,
that objectively, they do wonderful things around the world.
They also spend a lot of money on their employees and on airfare. And I'm going to trust Charity Watch if they say that they have a good ratio of.
They give them an A rating.
Okay,
give the American Cancer Society a C and Easter Seals a B minus.
Okay, well, I trust the charity rating organization.
No, really. I mean, it's kind of a different way that they do their charitable work. Instead of passing money on to charities, they just do the work themselves. So their numbers. I mean, somebody called my show the other day and said, "Do you realize that the amount of money that the Clintons give through the foundation gives to charity, is 2.9%. And I said, well, that sounds suspicious. I've got to look into it. So about 3 or 6%, Carly Fiorina on the campaign trail was saying only 6% of the money goes to charity. And that's a true statement if you look at just the money they donate to other charities. But in terms of what percentage of the money actually goes to programs and services that they provide, it's 88 or 89%. The average for charities is 75%. So we can say whatever we want about the Clintons, but I don't think it's fair to say that that's a bad charity. And what a shame it would be if that thing is shut down.
And I agree. I do agree with you, Kristen and Eric, that you know something will have to be done with it. But I think, Eric, you have another great point. Why is it okay for a corporation to give untold millions of dollars to a campaign? Isn't that about access?
It's all public. It's public record. Charities do not have to list who their donors are.
But they do.
The Clinton Foundation did.
They did. But it's not a requirement. I mean, they're essentially a private entity. We would have no idea who was giving to the Clinton Foundation if there hadn't been some pressure from the public because she's running.
We don't know who.
It's a great charity. They should be allowed to raise money. Do it when you leave office. Yep. You know, there is no reason that while she is president of the United States, they should have this $2 billion, by the way, that's how much this charity has raised, $2 billion operation on the side where there is a potential for a conflict or overlap.
Explain that to me. What happens with the conflict of interest? What happens then, Kristen?
There have already been stories. AP, not a partisan organization, reported earlier this week that they FOIA'd Hillary Clinton's schedule, and many of the people that she met with are people who donated to the Clinton Foundation. So
yeah, I know that.
Half of the people who weren't in government, so half of the private people who met with her, had private meetings, were also donors. I mean, that's a damning number.
82 out of like 154,
yeah.
Yep. Something.
Out of thousands of meetings.
But then where's the corruption? Is it that they donated? Tell me then that the Clintons then let somebody out of jail who shouldn't be out of jail, or they got gold bars in a trunk. I mean, the smoke is what you guys are describing. She said there's no fire. So tell me where the actual breach of conduct was then.
There is some evidence that people who donated to the Clinton Foundation later asked her for things and got them.
I'm talking
about like sports tickets. All right, I'm not saying that, you know, somebody got a really juicy contract in the Middle East, but there are cases where people donated to the Clinton Foundation and then there's an email trail linking them to asking for help
official?
From this or that.
It's got to be an official act. It's got to be, if you're talking about like they gave them sports tickets, that's nothing. That's like that's not a political issue. That's not a crime. If Hillary Clinton did in any way change U.S. foreign policy, did something, got somebody out of jail, as John said, changed something, made some sort of substantive change, that's a crime, a disqualifying event. That's horrible.
There were people who got meetings with her.
Meetings?
Who wanted,
yeah.
No, well, I'm just
meetings.
Saying that's all I'm suggesting is
right,
that
but don't
this,
you, do you agree, though, Kristen, that getting a meeting with someone isn't the equivalent of getting a policy from someone?
Yes, I do. But I don't know that we've dug enough to be able to connect State Department business and what was going on.
Well, let me give you guys one example. So the U.S. did approve a sale of uranium or some sort of nuclear substance to Russia. And that happened while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. State was one of the 9 agencies or so that had to sign off on this sale to some uranium company or from a company to Russia. There was this exchange, right?
Right.
She was her office was involved, and money was coming in from either the president of that company or that country to the Clinton Foundation. So you could describe that as a coincidence. She said it didn't have any bearing on her decision.
Didn't the other 8 agencies give it a thumbs up too?
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
the sale happened.
Right, okay. So, but it wasn't as if State was an outlier in that, in taking the donors.
No, donor also gave, I believe, $50 million.
Let me be the Clinton Pollyanna.
A lot of money.
You know, I know I fairly criticize sometimes for being too easy on Hillary Clinton, but let's look at it the other way. Okay, so they are leveraging their fame and notoriety to raise billions of dollars to help poor people around the world. Maybe that's something we should applaud, as long as we're not seeing that it's having an influence
right.
on politics.
They're not putting it in their pocket.
Do it when they. That's what every president does when they leave. They start a foundation. They raise money. That's what Bill Clinton did. But his wife is now possibly going to be the leader of the free world. Well, you dial it back.
I think you do more than that, and you do it when she becomes Secretary of State. I mean, I think I'm in total agreement with Kristen, which is like
this never happens.
I know.
Let Eric have the floor, please.
When she became Secretary of State, they needed to dissociate the Clinton name from this foundation and probably the Clinton family from it, because it is this potential for conflict of interest. The appearance of improprieties is strong. And, you know, I think that you could have folded this in, like I said, to the Gates Foundation, to some of these other things that do international global health stuff without harming children who have clean water. I just think that it's unseemly to have your Secretary of State with her name on a charity that's going around shaking the cup in front of foreign
She indicated in an interview that they plan to transfer some of these to other organizations.
They said that when she
just
becomes
their Canadian operation.
When she becomes president, they're gonna
try not to giggle when you say that. All right, Kristen,
get
right,
out of
right.
there. And so if it's important when she's president, it's important when she's the top diplomat for the most powerful country in the world. I mean, you know, it's like. This is one of these regrettable decisions, as I said, that Hillary Clinton made along with her private email server.
Eric, does Chelsea have to step down too?
I just think the Clintons have to get their name off it. I think Chelsea Clinton can work for a charity called the Chelsea Foundation or something like that. But what's the name of their cat? I don't know.
Most people who acquire wealth when they come into public office, they put that in a trust. They do something to totally dissociate themselves from the money. And the forms that charities have to file to list, you know, how much they're spending and where the money's going are not detailed at all. So I know they do great work, but they also have a bunch of the Clinton buddies on their payroll. And we don't really know how they spend their money because it's not required under law to be that detailed in your expense accounting like it is for campaigns. You spend $25 on gas for your campaign. You have to report that. It's not the same for charities.
Let's go on to the Donald Trump campaign. Was the headline, did he have a good week or a bad week? Eric, what do you think, Donald Trump campaign?
A gobsmacking week. I mean, this guy has done a 180 on his immigration. His calling card was he was going to get a deportation force and go door to door and grab people who are here illegally, no matter how long they've been here, and put them on a bus and send them back across the border wherever they came from. And now he's saying, well, we can work with them. I thought it was a stunning week in his campaign. And I've been saying all along that something outrageous that he's going to, something like way out that he says is going to hurt his campaign, is going to make him implode. Now I think that something actually moderate and sensible that he said is going to destroy his campaign. That's my new argument here. What does anybody else think?
Well, I think maybe in the last 3 or 4 hours he did another 180.
Oh, yeah, I think he hardened his softening.
So
yeah.
Oh, he did?
Your information's like 10 minutes old, Eric. Yeah.
Man.
He hardened his softening is exactly right. Now
go ahead, Kristen. Finish that.
Are we talking about hand size again?
No.
he is now saying that he is still going to force illegal immigrants to leave the country before they can come back in. And he won't really comment on whether or not he's going to have this mass deportation. But if you are illegally here, he is sticking to his stance that you have to leave before you can come back. I mean, it's still crazy.
That's not totally unfeasible.
That's not what
he was saying in the town hall the other night. He was saying, if you've been here a long time, we'll work with you. We'll work with you.
Yeah,
you
know, but he backed off on that.
He was espousing Jeb Bush's immigration policy, which is like, hey, you're here, and Barack Obama's too. Like, we'll find a way to legalize. We're not going to give you citizenship, but we'll legalize you.
Jeb Bush was asked about that. You know, he said, now Donald Trump is saying what you said, and Bush said, I can't take anything he says seriously because he believes in nothing. You know, he believes in nothing, so nothing that he says can be taken.
I think you're right, Steve. I think the idea that Donald Trump is waffling would suggest that he had a plan to waffle from. He's just up there ad-libbing what seems to at the moment be the strongest thing to say without, I think, any real concern for what that means. For instance, has anybody ever on any of these speeches of his gotten from him how we're going to get the 11, or as he said the other day, maybe 30 million people? How do we get them? I mean, Eric, they're not going to go door to door. Has anybody heard him articulate how we're going to get the illegals out of here?
I don't think they have.
We're going to be tough, believe me. We're going to be so tough.
It's going to be a big wall with a beautiful door, believe me.
I do have a strategy, by the way. Here's what you do. You go into Pilsen, say, and you litter the street with iPhones, and then you tell them that there are Pokemon Go characters in Mexico. And then when they go over, then you build a wall, and then you just, you, for the cost of a phone, we could get rid of them.
I think you're absolutely right.
That's just an idea.
You should be on, you should be on Trump's cabinet.
For all
I mean, that is a Trump idea.
All of you listening in Pilsen, John just picked a community out of the top of his head. It was not a reflection on any particular neighborhood.
Mark Kirk has charged President Obama with acting like a drug dealer this past week. The paying the $400 million to Iran on the same day that Iran released U.S. prisoners. He also accused Tammy Duckworth of mocking stroke victims. Is this a nod, you guys, to maybe I'm not going to support Donald Trump, but I'm going to at least sort of mimic his tough talk? Is that what Kirk is doing here?
I don't know. I mean, he's had so many outbursts like this over the past couple of years, long before Trump was really on the scene, that I don't know what to attribute it to. You know, they are, Senator Kirk and Congresswoman Duckworth are coming to the Tribune editorial board on October 3rd for their endorsement interview. We're getting them first.
It will probably
to watch them debate.
It will probably be live streamed.
So we'll
say, I want to watch
and,
that
and
on
we'll,
Facebook.
We'll promote it relentlessly on this podcast and elsewhere, so you won't miss it.
I hope so.
I think until, just personally, I'm in the room with him and I see how he communicates, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if this is common with stroke victims to have like more impulsive speech, or if maybe, I don't know, maybe he is trying to emulate some of Donald Trump. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't think he's emulating Donald Trump. The drug dealer comment was just kind of strange.
Well, he was talking about the method of payment, right? That you paid with suitcases of money like a drug dealer.
I guess the charge was this was a racially tinged remark. When I think of a drug dealer, I don't think of a African American person.
No,
I actually don't understand it either.
I don't quite even understand why. I mean, a drug dealer doesn't pay. I mean, if this is ransom, it does. Like, they don't pay ransom. I mean, I guess the fact that they were dealing in currency.
Well, that gets lost in all of this, doesn't
it? It was just a strange thing. But I do share what I think is Kristen's concern, and it's certainly mine too. Is I think the health question with Mark Kirk is a relevant one. I mean, the man had a serious stroke. He battled back from it very courageously, and we should all honor him for that. But is he really up for this job? And I think that's a question that is certainly relevant to ask, and it's not insulting. And Tammy Duckworth brought it up in a really clumsy way and then backed away from it. I think she ought to just say it. If she's going to say it, she should just say it. She shouldn't, like, say, what is he saying? He says deranged things.
And called him unhinged.
Unhinged. I mean, those are some strange codes. Bring it on the table. Say, look, I think that this man's health is an issue, and we should deal with it, and let's be grown-ups about this and talk about what impact a stroke has on you and whether you can do the job as the United States senator. That's a fair question when you've had a stroke.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, right? Because we've all known him for decades or whatever. And, you know, whether you agree with his policies or not, I feel he's a committed public servant. I mean, I think he's a guy who's genuine about it. But he's facing things out of his control right now. And it's fair to ask. That's one. Two, I really think we need to come up with a list of words that should be prohibited from political discussion. Unhinged maybe is one, because that's been used a lot. But earlier we were talking about pivot. The pivot to me now means lie. If you're going to pivot, that means you're going to lie about what you said or how you feel before.
Really? You think so?
Absolutely. At this point, if you're going to say candidate A needs to pivot from his earlier position, that means he needs to lie about what he thinks.
Evolve is the
pivot. Well, don't you let them, but aren't... Steve,
I think
like
candidates evolve. I think they do. Hillary Clinton, not
in 3 weeks.
she has pivoted on the Trans-Pacific trade deal.
Has.
She was against gay marriage until 2013, and then she was for it.
I'll give her gay
who
marriage.
Are you talking about now, Tammy or
no,
Hillary?
No,
Hillary. Sorry.
Yeah. I'll give her gay marriage because that was a length of time. TPP was pretty convenient. You know, that's when we're a pivot.
She pivoted on college. Free college tuition because Bernie sort of put her to the wall. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. My politics have evolved over time, but they all do it. I mean, Hillary's change on gay marriage came right after a huge national poll showed that more and more people were supporting the idea of gay marriage.
I think the health of Mark Kirk is a more relevant issue than the health of Hillary Clinton. It seems to me like if they're just trying to open up every avenue of attack against Hillary Clinton, they're going after the health card, too. And that seems to be just as silly as some of the other tactics they've tried. They ought to be able to beat her on a lot of this stuff. And I think the health stuff is kind of a distraction from where their focus should be.
Yeah, I don't see any evidence that Hillary Clinton's health is impaired. Nothing in her public speeches and her responses to questions suggests that she's like not clicking on this.
Oh, I think it's more sexist than it's healthy. Yeah.
Did you guys see that CNN canceled the Dr. Drew show a week after he questioned her health?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
No. As a result of that, or was that just a coinky?
I don't know that they're saying it's a result of it, but it was announced today that they canceled the show, and I guess last week he speculated negatively about her health.
Why is there's so few questions about Trump is 2 years older than she is.
Yeah,
there's no questions about his health. And
he released his physical in December. Remember,
I reread that.
Not his physical. It was a letter.
I think he wrote that. It was a letter by his doctor
with typos all over. It was just like, it was hilarious.
Ridiculous.
And it was funny. It was in the same sort of pattern as a Donald Trump speech.
He's going to be the
healthiest. He's going to be the healthiest president ever.
Ever.
I think the attacks on Hillary Clinton's health are just ridiculous. And people should be calling out Rudy Giuliani. He was on the Sunday talk shows raising this. Do not have him
talk
on your
unhinged.
Shows.
Talk about
unhinged. Oh, just
search
ridiculous.
The internet. It's all there. Search the internet.
Yeah. Look on
so
the
then,
internet.
So then everybody went to the internet and it wasn't. No. The internet then put up stories about how crazy Giuliani is on this issue.
Well, you could search the internet and find people who think Giuliani was behind 9/11, I'm sure, right?
Sure.
Or people who think that Sandy Hook, the victims in Sandy Hook were all child actors, which is something that Hillary Clinton
okay,
brought
let's
up.
Do this
can I, no, can I say one more thing, John, since
sure,
I brought
sure,
it up?
Sure, go ahead, Steve.
CNN Money reporting on this Dr. Drew story, which is just breaking this morning, said it was a part of a broader shakeup at Headline News. They got rid of Nancy Grace as well, too. So
really?
So may or may not have been related.
This is all interesting, but I think the thing that Illinoisans are especially gripped by, because they always are, is the state comptroller race. Kristen, will you just give us the headline on that, and then we'll move on?
Yes. The headline is you have four candidates from Libertarian, Green, Republican, Democrat. Republican, Democrat are warring over this, and one was an appointee of Governor Rauner, and the other is a protege of House Speaker Michael Madigan. So it's it's during their debate before us, it's an issue of who's more independent.
Oh, really? Because it seems to me like it's who do you like better, Rauner or Madigan and Culleton. It's not that?
No, it is. I mean, they're both trying to sort of distance themselves. The comptroller who's there now, Leslie Monker, was appointed because Judy Bartopinka passed away, and that's how the Constitution works. The governor gets to make that appointment. It's not like she gave big donations to party leaders or somehow was considered.
Right.
She was chosen. Susana Mendoza is a city clerk, rising star in the Democratic Party, really sharp and well-spoken. But she did spend 10 years in the Illinois House under Speaker Michael Madigan, has called him her mentor, and passed years and years of unbalanced budgets while she was there. So they both have some baggage.
Do they both agree it shouldn't be an elected position?
Yeah, that it shouldn't even exist.
No, we tried to push them on that. That office should be combined with the treasurer's office,
right,
like many other states. And Munger is for it.
Munger
is
on
it
now.
Right.
Yeah. Munger was for it. Munger was definitely for it. I thought that I was at the debate also. I thought Susana Mendoza did very well. First off, she's very well spoken. She's quick. And I'm thinking that she is going to be a candidate for a higher office down the line, maybe governor, maybe mayor of Chicago. That she's got some real political skills. Now, Kristen's right. She's got to wear this onion of her years of support for Michael Madigan around her neck. But she's good. And I think that she's clearly running for this office because she wants – she's a stepping stone.
That's what controller is, really, isn't it?
It is. And I love it. And the Libertarian candidate is a CPA. What is her name, Kristen?
Claire Ball.
I thought she was very impressive because she's kind of a – I mean this in a really positive way, kind of a nerd. She's like – she's an accountant. She's like
– So she's interested in the job.
She wants to actually be the controller. Yeah. Wait a minute. Maybe I can get behind this. So anyway. But it was an interesting debate, and I know people are laughing about – controller debate being something put you to sleep, but this is the statewide election that is. I know they don't like to hear this, but it's a proxy between the fight between Rauner. If you're a supporter of Governor Rauner, you're going to vote for Munger. If you're a supporter of the Democratic representation in the General Assembly, Mike Madigan, John Cullerton, et cetera, you're going to vote for Susana Mendoza. You're going to be tea leaves to be read after the returns come
out. Yeah, no kidding. All right, last topic, and Kristen, you'll go first. It was originally Comiskey. Then it became known affectionately as The Cell. Now, because Chico Bail Bonds isn't available, Southsiders will be playing at Guaranteed Rate Field. Your thoughts?
I mean, could we have done worse? I'm not sure. Maybe like Vagisil Stadium. Tampax.
Is there no shame? Is there no shame in naming ballparks anymore? Or you know, end of the year college football bowl games. If anybody has the money, I guess you get to get the naming.
Who's
rights,
this
right?
on? Is this on the Sox or the state?
It would have
That's
been
a good question.
Actually the Illinois Sports Facility right. Planning Board would have done the deal because they have the rights. They negotiated the deal with US Cellular, but they don't really do anything without White Sox approval. I mean, I can't criticize the money part because it is a taxpayer subsidized stadium. So anything they can do to increase revenue, they should be doing. But it's just, this is why when it changed from Comiskey to US Cellular Field, I have always just called it Sox Park. I'm going to Sox Park. You should just call it that going forward and ignore this, you know, Peter Francis Tracy bankruptcy field.
He'll
name.
Call you. He calls. He will call you.
He will call you.
Like Kristen, I've also for years said I'm not going to Sox Park.
Another, I still say Comiskey.
Another
I
year that Comiskey. I'm not going to Sox Park. Well, but you know, it was. But you know, I have to say, my press fedora is off to Guaranteed Rate. For it's a brilliant move on their part, and it seems like they've already gotten. What do they think? They paid like $13 million, or I mean, nobody really knows, but they paid in the $10 to $20 million range for this. They've almost gotten that much worth of advertising already. It's brilliant. The name is going to be all over the place.
The larger question is why we in the media really give this free advertising to companies who buy a stadium. Now and it's just, especially for me with the football bowls. You know, the Ameritrade Rose Bowl. Why do we report it that way? It's the Rose Bowl. Why doesn't someone say the Rose Bowl? I can understand if you're under contract to broadcast it. You've right. got
That's
to give it.
The TV network.
Sure,
thing.
I get that. But if you're not, if we're sitting in Chicago or Wichita or wherever and doing a news story on it, why do we play that game?
Why is it necessary for us to say the Sox are playing at home tonight? The Sox are playing over at Sox Park. Why don't the announcers on
right.
radio
and then
TV
people say, well, Wrigley Field. What about Wrigley Field? I mean, that was owned by a guy named Wrigley. I think that's
well,
a little different.
It was part of the Wrigley Gum Company, right?
But it was also owned by a guy named Wrigley. I mean, I don't know. Was it done there to publicize?
To my, I never ever think of Wrigley Gum when
I don't either.
When
no.
I hear Wrigley Field. So it doesn't really work as an advertisement. I don't think I'm going to be able to dissociate Guaranteed Rate from the mortgage company whenever I hear that.
Do you think of United Airlines when you say United Center?
I don't, and that's interesting. Either. And the reason is because United is just is a word.
The United States.
But if you hear like the Allstate Arena, I always think of the insurance company when I hear Allstate Arena.
Or do you think of a mistake when you hear Guaranteed Lending?
Guaranteed Rate.
Oh, Guaranteed Rate.
See, you're already messing it up.
Just think that the Sox are the second baseball team in Chicago, and they're on the poor side of town, and I think they're always trying to...
Kristen is... Oh, my God.
Kristen has just collapsed.
Kristen has collapsed in her chair.
Let me just finish this prejudiced thought of mine. And
the poor side of town. I'm never going to forget that one. Okay.
And if they're trying to build the brand or franchise or get more people to go to the ballpark, I think they should do something that images them other than this, what this name images.
I think less is more.
I think they're being penny wise and pound foolish here.
I disagree. I think they're going to, no one's going to care. After a few years, no one's going to care. And they're going to use that money and they're going to hire a shortstop that's going to put them in a division.
What's the name going to evolve since we've talked about, or pivot? What's the name going to pivot to? Because it became the Cell. You know, it wasn't US Cellular Field. Guaranteed.
The grave.
I think Kristen's right. Let's go to Sox Park. You can name it whatever you want.
Help
our
those
recommendations,
people out down there.
Our recommendations this week are what? I'm still watching The Night Of. I don't know if you guys are following that series.
That was recommended to me. It's really good.
Yeah, really good. Really good. So if you're looking for some way to waste a lot of time watching a show that you got to watch, we're watching The Night Of. How about you guys?
I'll endorse the Skeptical Inquirer. It's a magazine that's just hit its 40th anniversary, started by Carl Sagan, Isaac Asimov, James Randi, and those guys. And basically, it is a monthly magazine devoted to poking holes in pseudoscience, paranormal, medical quackery, and so on. They've got Roswell. They go after that. They're very much after people who are all a flutter about GMOs, you know, genetically modified foods. They think that that's all much ado about nothing. Really interesting magazine, very, very scientifically oriented, Skeptical Inquirer, 40th anniversary issue just arrived in my mailbox.
I'm reading a book, a memoir right now called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance.
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, I think it's real. It's kind of a weird coincidence. So I saw him interviewed once, and the idea was this: he grew up in Kentucky and then southwestern Ohio. And the interview I saw was how he has an understanding of the Trump voters in a way. You know, we think of poor people in this country as often minorities, and he is very familiar with growing up poor as a white guy in Ohio. Coincidentally, he lived much of his life in Middletown, Ohio, or Middleton, which is halfway between Dayton, where my daughter goes to school, and Miami, Ohio, where my son goes, and it's the town that we stay in.
Oh, wow.
So I've been interested in reading this memoir about growing up as a hillbilly from Kentucky and the people of that part of the country.
Mm-hmm. I've heard
of
that.
How about you, Kristen? What do you like?
So I am recommending that everybody read the Illinois Supreme Court decision that came out yesterday, shutting down redistricting reform, even the right of voters to be able to vote on it in November. It's a powerful 4-3 decision. Of course, Mike Madigan's Democrats, who he finances to win their Supreme Court races, sided with him. Our unfair and corrupt, rigged redistricting, the way we draw maps for legislative districts, will continue. And all of this blood, sweat, and tears put in by volunteers who collected hundreds of thousands of signatures was just shut down again.
John, I'd like to withdraw my recommendation and second Kristen's.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's just ridiculous.
We're watching a really good TV show. Well, that's been on your radar for a long time, too, Eric. I know that's been an issue that you kind of...
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I think that the public should be able to vote on it. I'm not big into referenda, but, you know, government by referendum. But this is the kind of issue where a legislature is conflicted enough that the voters should be able to decide this. You know, I'm not an Illinois constitutional scholar, but it does seem to me like this is the kind of thing that the voters should have been allowed to decide. And I also think that this is the kind of thing that should be done nationally, that every state ought to be able to get rid of gerrymandering everywhere and have it done by independent commissions.
You talk about things I think that could be the one of the most impactful fixes in politics in this country.
I'm thinking of that, Steve. But we don't. But it's not sexy, and it's hard to understand. And
it's pretty easy to understand, actually.
And then, what's the fair resolution to, you know, districts and stuff like that? I don't know. Maybe it's easier to you guys.
You draw the boundaries without regards to political affiliation.
Aren't there some states? I'm trying to think about Arizona. Yeah. Arizona
Iowa,
does something that is it a district?
Iowa's like by computer. A lot of them just you'd look at the population, you divide it up into 118 House districts. The way we do it now, you find the incumbent. Oh, when she happens to live on this block, so we got to keep her in this district. And then you wind all the way around to marginalize all the people who might run against her, to take out the Republicans, and to make sure. I mean, we have districts in Chicago.
And to bring in just enough Republicans to make sure that the Republican nearby can't win.
To dilute,
right.
You dilute the strength of, it's
you
various.
You carve up, you know, heavy Republican areas. We have districts that start in downtown Chicago and snake all the way down to Will County, which is farm country. Just a small, narrow line all the way. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, no, it makes sense. It just makes it makes evil sense, right? I mean, it's
Eric Zorn. You can read Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune and online. Kristen McQuarrie, editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand, thank you for joining us as always. I'm John Williams. By the way, Thomas Jefferson believed in a rectilinear districting of the states. He just wanted to drop a grid on things. I'm going to be talking to him at the College of DuPage the Saturday before the election, Saturday, November 5th. It's going to be a remarkable conversation, and tickets for that are available at wgnradio.com/events. Thank you, Kristen Decker, our producer. Bob Ferguson is the engineer of the Mincing Rascals, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.